Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, and we are live at the Beacon Building. We're at 814 Elm Street, and you are listening to The Pulse 107.7 FM. And we have a packed studio today. It's actually standing room only in the studio at the moment. But we have three actors from the play that's going to be beginning at the Palace Theater, Les Mis. And so let's welcome Andrew, Laurie, and Joe. Welcome to Food
Hi,
for
guys.
Thought.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm sorry to admit, I only finally saw the movie of Les Mis just about a year or year and a half ago.
That's okay.
Which is, I mean, that's horrible because my grandfather, who lived in France probably in the 1860s or 70s. As I was a kid, I remember him telling me once that he sat on Victor Hugo's lap.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if I'm buying it because as we know, as we get older, we tend to kind of make the stories a little bit more grand than they really are. But, you know, clearly it was his book that brought on the musical, and that's pretty
right.
cool to think
that
that's
is.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have been... And probably in the early 60s, he'd have been around 90 years old. So
it's possible. Yeah,
it is possible. But I'm chalking it up to, he's just making it up. You know? Victor Hugo. Oh, yeah. We used to hang out and drink together.
Yeah.
George Washington slept here.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we're just finding out, because people that work in the theater arts typically have late nights. And you guys are all like hanging at the Red Arrow Diner, we found out. And you're not local. So that's kind of cool that you found your way there.
Yeah,
we just said we have one cast member who has been at the Red Arrow Diner every morning for biscuits and gravy. And he's really thin, too, so there must be something magic in that.
Yeah.
Something must be magic.
I know, I can't eat this one. No way.
Les Miserables opens on May the 1st. You've got about a dozen shows. Mm-hmm. So tell us, you just got to town. How do rehearsals feel so far?
Rehearsals feel great. We are finishing Act One later on this afternoon. So we're, halfway done blocking the show. So it's exciting. This cast is unbelievable. And so it's going to be a great show at the Palace.
So some of you have played the Palace before at different productions?
Yes. This will be my fourth time here.
Right. And either of you gentlemen?
It'll be my first time actually taking on the show as well as the Palace.
Oh,
so I'm
ooh,
double excited.
It's a twofer, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've seen the theater and you see how beautiful it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've seen a lot of shows there and comedy. It's a great room for that. It just is a very special place, as you know, for your many, many times here.
Yes, I love it here. I would come back here all the time if they would have me. It's a wonderful place. The patrons that come see the shows are so thankful for the work that we're putting up there, and the people that Carl Rajot hires are just always exquisite actors and just really excited about putting on the shows here.
I think what's also exciting is that it's the 100th year of the Palace in town, and that's a big deal. Les Mis is a big show.
Mm-hmm.
It's always special whenever you get to do it, but to do it in a historic place like that is really, really, really exciting to be part of.
And you've done Les Mis before?
This is my sixth time performing in Les Mis. I started it in 2008, and I've gone through a lot with it. I always say, people would say, oh, who would you like to have dinner with? I say Victor Hugo because he's put a lot of money in my pocket.
There you go.
Yeah. I could have hooked you up with my grandfather.
Yeah,
exactly.
It
right?
could have been the 4 degrees of Victor Hugo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. And so I see by our notes here that you play Valjean. Is that the role that you have played in your other past?
This will be my fourth time playing Jean Valjean. And every time I do it, I never get tired of it. It's such a gift. This show is it's so special. The tagline for Les Mis historically has been the world's most popular musical. And when you think about that 65 million people in the world have seen this show, and you think about what the show's about, it really does give you a good faith in humanity when so often we're challenged by finding things to faith in humanity.
I thought Kinky Boots was the one that was the...
It's a close second.
Yeah. It's a close second.
Now, you've played that part for four times. You
yes.
said. This is your fourth
yeah,
time?
Yeah.
So do you have to really go to all the practices? Or...
Well, yes. Every production is different, just with different people, and the costumes are different, the props, everything is a little bit different, and that actually makes it, it keeps you on your toes every time. So yeah, you never get bored. You don't get bored with the material, but all those new elements that get added, and every director has a new vision for it, which is wonderful, and that's the sign of a really strong piece.
Right. Now, can you just tell us a little bit about your background? What else you've done?
I'm from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And
ooh, home of the Diners.
I know. And,
major yeah,
that's
Diners.
That's right, Major Diners, yeah. And, yeah, I grew up listening to Les Mis, and I always wanted to be a part of it, and finally 10 years into my professional career, I did get to be a part of it in the national tour in 2008. And I've never looked back. It's been a real, and in some way, shape, or form, every year I've been part of it at some point and somewhere in the country. So, yeah, I'm really, really lucky.
That's Andrew Foote, who was just speaking. Also next to him is Joe Hager, who plays Javert. So what research do you have to do, or what videos or movies do you watch? Or do you watch nothing so that you give it your own fresh interpretation?
Sure. There's definitely a lot of material out there to draw inspiration from. For me personally, I like just taking a look at the script. You know, put the music aside, look at the words on the page, and break down what you're about to do. So that's where my process starts, and then obviously learning the material, getting it living in your body, and now we're at the process where we get to make awesome discoveries with other actors on stage, and that for me is the most rewarding part.
All right, so you'll do a dozen shows, May 1st through the 16th, Palace Theater, 668-5588 for Les Misérables. So is each show a little different, or do you find new ways just to change your character a little bit without throwing anybody off, to keep it fresh? Although I guess after 12 shows isn't that many, but do you find ways to have fun within the material itself?
The fun part for me is just continuing to find the new discoveries within the work that you do. You know, shows may change from night to night, subtly, hopefully. You know, we always want to keep it as tight as possible, but that doesn't mean that you can't make wonderful discoveries in the moment and put that into your next show.
That's Joe Hager. Also with us is Laurie Elizabeth Gardner. Eponine, is that how the name
Eponine,
is?
Eponine, yeah.
Eponine, right.
Eponine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Eponine.
Eponine, yeah.
So what's your story, girl?
My story is I actually just finished doing the show out in Arizona 2 weeks ago, and I was a different role. I was Cosette, and I did not grow up learning the show or knowing the show. So when I was hired to be in the show, I kind of got to discover everything, and I completely fell in love with the show. I fell in love with the music, the characters, and so I'm so happy to come to the Palace and come back here and do the show again, because it's completely different. It's a very different show here, and it's a different role. So that's really exciting for me. I feel really privileged to be doing it more than one time and to be doing a different character.
I assume the music is a live orchestra?
It is, yeah. We have about, I think, 8 people in this orchestra. So it doesn't sound like that many when you're used to Les Mis having, you know, 30, amazing amounts of people. But the Palace is so good about figuring out what they need, and you don't miss all of the instruments, as strange as that might sound for such a big show.
Our music director was working last night on some great orchestrations.
Yeah.
I was hearing them. They sound fantastic.
That,
they're
going to
be great.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Garrett Godden. I think I've met him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a regular at the Palace, right? He does
this season. Yes.
Shows.
He's amazingly talented. We're in good hands.
And Carl Rajat is one of the most creative choreographers, because I see the variety of shows that he puts on during the year. Some of the shows that are actually Palace originals.
Yes.
So
they're unbelievable.
He really gets to take those wings and fly. But now he's working with somebody else's work, but finds his way, I guess, to make it different for the performer.
He does. He's very unique, and he can look at a piece that something like Les Mis that's been done so much and for so many years, and he can put a whole new spin on it. And he's so creative, and he's just very giving as a director and choreographer.
It almost seems like some performers are drawn to this particular piece of work, this art, as you mentioned, as well. So any of you have any comedy background, or what kinds of other things have you done or would you like to do? We'll start with Andrew.
Well, in musical theater, you kind of have to learn a little bit of everything. Sing, act, dance, do a little. Right after this, I'm going to be doing South Pacific and in a comedy role, actually, which is going to be fun after doing a bunch of Les Mis for the last year or so. So I'm real excited to be doing that. So, you know, you always get to flex different muscles, you know, mm-hmm. so That's something I'm really excited about.
Joe, have you flexed any comedy muscles?
Yes. I think literally. Once upon a time, I did Gaston in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, so, perfect.
You know, that's much more of a villain role, and Javert can be perceived as that, but I think he's actually one of the most misunderstood characters in the show. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to give a fresh look and a non-comedic look to a piece.
And well, I also see that you played Sky in Guys and Dolls.
I did, yes.
My son was into theater for a little bit and then went towards the acting part of it. But he played that role as well.
It's a fun role. Yeah. It is a
fun
musical,
very,
too.
Very, yeah.
I heard Once Upon a Time they locked Stephen Sondheim, Andrew Lloyd Webber, all these famous composers in a room and said, we aren't going to let you guys out until you come out with the one show that is the perfect musical formula. And they settled on Guys and Dolls. So.
There you go. Yeah, that was awesome.
It probably didn't take them too long to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, that's probably true.
They wanted to get to the bar.
They're like, this is fine.
Funny you'd mention that because that was the only production I was in high school.
Really?
But I had a bunch of small parts. I mean, this is all about gangsters, and at the time, in the 10th or 11th grade, I wasn't even 5 feet tall yet, wasn't shaving. I didn't exactly smack up Tony Soprano.
That's awesome.
You know, but it was fun. Now, what about, you strike me like you maybe have done or could do some comedy. I'm looking at you. For some reason, I'm thinking Katy Perry, and I don't know why.
I get that a lot. Thank you. I think she's beautiful, so I will take that.
Thank you.
I'm usually more of a comedic actress. Comedy, improv, it's kind of my jam. But it's been really fun to kind of, you know, like Andrew said, you have to kind of be this bag of tricks in musical theater. And so it's really fun to kind of stretch and do different things and use different parts of you that, you know, are maybe uncomfortable or vulnerable. And it's exciting.
Andrew, you mentioned that you've already got your next gig lined up. Is that typical that you have a couple of them, you know, out from where you're currently at, or is
from
it
your mouth to God's ear?
Yeah, there you go. Sometimes it works out that way, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, you get used to unemployment, or it's when it rains, it pours. I think that's just how it goes. Yeah.
Sure. Well, so. I mean, there's voiceover work, there's commercial work too. Is anybody involved with any of that at all?
I did a national commercial 2 years ago for Nickelodeon.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was very cool. The funny thing was, it was I instantly found out all of my old friends who had children because they all started calling me all of a sudden and say, was that you on TV?
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. So do you have an agent?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. And what about you?
I do.
And?
Yes, I do.
Now, this is a food show, and before we let you go, you know, we do have spatulas out there that hand to all the guests.
Thank you so much.
But I went to thought, what do you need the spatula for? Like, you, do you guys do your own cooking?
Well,
we do. Eat, actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we eat, we cook, we eat. Well, we all live together in a cast house.
Okay.
And so, you know.
A crack house?
Cast house.
Former crack house.
Formerly known as. Yeah. And so we all cook a lot, so there's a lot of us in the kitchen at the same time. And so we saw these amazing spatulas, and we were like, wow, we need those. So thank you so much.
I tried making an omelet this morning with a hamburger flipper, so this will be coming in handy.
Most of the cast lives together in town here in a beautiful old house that, well, very luckily houses about 30 people, and we can all live together as a big kitchen, big
That's
common
great.
Area. And it's a lot of fun, and it's actually really nice, too.
Now, is it, like, walkable? Is it?
Yes.
Yes, so it is.
Okay. It's got to be the North End.
I'm not going to give out the address.
It's got to be the North End.
Yeah.
Is it North End?
Well, I don't know. Okay. But it's, you know, we can walk to the theater.
Yeah,
and
well, you've been there. You've lived in it before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that typically where the cast stays in this whatever this place is at?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, for this theater, I mean, every theater works a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
But for here, we all live together in one big house. And we have a lot of locals from, you know, around New Hampshire that work here as well and from Boston. So that's always nice to meet people. You know,
well, we can tell you because we just did an interview on the 7th of May. I'm not really sure if you have shows that night, which is a Thursday. I think you're off that night.
Mm.
There is going to be a massive taco tour up and down Elm Street.
Absolutely. We'll be there.
You got to be all over that.
We'll be there.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actors Eat.
It's all up Hanover Street by the pet. It's all. But yeah, if you don't have a show that night, you have to.
We had 15,000 people last year. And
well, it starts at 4.
50,
it starts
50
at 4. We'll be there. And if
Holy
we have a show,
cow.
We'll go before.
$2 a taco. You go around to there's usually over 40 restaurants that are involved in it. It usually brings 15,000 to 17,000 people to downtown. So it's really,
that's really
fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Looks like we'll be at the taco bar.
We'll be at the taco Back home party.
Andrew Foote, also Laurie, Elizabeth Gardner, Joe Hager, all performers in Les Miserables, Les Mis, coming to the Palace Theater. Opening night is May 1st, runs to the 16th. A dozen shows. Get your tickets, 668-5588. And if you've never been to the Palace, why not? This
exactly.
would be a good first show to see. Well, welcome to New Hampshire, and I won't do the break a leg thing because that's so overdone. But break a spatula.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
And if you need any recipes, go to Food for Thought NH. All our recipes are up there. So
thank you so much.
There you go.
Terrific.
You're listening to Food for Thought. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with June and Meatless Mondays on Tuesdays. That's what we're going to do today. So we'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. Live at the Beacon Building, 107.7 FM or WTPLFM.com, streaming all around the world. And before we get in with June and Meatless Tuesdays, we'll call it today, Mike is going to read off some sponsors.
Well, we just want to thank people who are on board for Food for Thought and enjoy talking about food every day. I'm not sure that there's any food radio shows done 5 days a week anywhere in New England. I mean, there could be that I'm not aware of.
I don't think so.
So we're glad to have...
I think we're it, Mike.
This is it, huh?
I think this is a big show.
The rest of the world jumps on. Puerto Vallarta, 2nd Street, authentic Mexican food. They are one of our newest sponsors, as is Casey's Rib Shack, neighbors of Puerto Vallarta.
Two
very different
right?
kinds of food, so it's okay to kind of mention them together because we love them both. So we got to get Kevin from Casey Rib Shack in here one of these days.
Yes, for sure.
He is a character, and the food is fantastic. Although kind of tough for a Meatless Monday or Meatless Tuesday.
Right.
Although I'm sure you have some beans and corn on the cob.
There you go. You can have those refried beans or whatever.
June's in the house. Hi, June.
Hi. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
I am good this week. I want to start out by saying I did my first 4-week weigh-in kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Well, tell people
that's
what you're doing.
At the healthy.
Yeah, tell people what you're doing.
Healthy Mondays.
Integrity Fit, right?
Integrity Fit. And I've been going 4 weeks, and I'm down 8.8 pounds of body fat.
That's wonderful.
Not pounds, but
right.
body fat. That's just amazing.
And that's what you want to go.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm going to be lean and mean.
Oh, well, so
good thing they can't see me.
Yeah. This woman doesn't have a mean bone in her body, does she?
Oh, well, you never know. But and another thing I'd like to say is last week I did this mushroom stroganoff, and I gave it to
Carol.
The
recipe we talked about.
Right. And I made it, and I just want to say it's a good recipe, but it needs to be tweaked a little. Like where it has 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire, I would do 1. And then add some garlic, and also it doesn't say anything about really cooking the mushrooms, like frying them first. And I think that would add a little more flavor to it than just throwing them in the broth.
Yeah, let the water cook off, right? So you got more of a concentrated mushroom flavor.
Yeah, and they tended, the way the recipe did it, it tended to be like chewy. You know, the mushrooms were chewy-like, where if I would have cooked them on first, they wouldn't have been. But it was a pretty good recipe. I really liked it. I was going to bring it in, but I wasn't happy with the way it tasted. So I said, no, I'm not going to tease you guys this week. Make you try one of my wonders there. But I have a couple things this week. And this one here I've had with me for a while, and I haven't tried it, but I think I'm really going to. It's called an Egyptian edamame stew.
I never can say edamame.
You just did.
I never do. I have to look at it before I say it and then think about it because I never say it right.
I love edamame as an appetizer in a Chinese restaurant. With a little bit of salt. You just pop them out of the husks.
And
there.
You know what? They're so good.
Oh, they're like and one of the best foods.
I know. They're so healthy for you.
Yeah, but what do you do with them? I mean, you just eat them like that. I mean, I do like them like that. I do.
Yeah,
but
salted with sea salt.
What else can you do with them?
Well, this is a stew that you make with them.
Okay.
So
right. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. You take 15 ounces of edamames, and what you're going to do is bring a large saucepan of water to boil, add the edamames, and cook them till tender, about 4 to 5 minutes, or according to your package. Then you're going to take a tablespoon of olive oil, a large onion cut up, a large zucchini chopped, 2 tablespoons of garlic, cumin, coriander, pepper, cayenne pepper, 28 ounces of tomato, and I would always use the fire roasted. I'm so fixed on those. They have so much
very
more.
Good.
They have so much more flavor. And 1/4 cup of cilantro and 3 tablespoons of lemon juice. And once you boiled the edamames, you heat the oil in the pan, add the onions, and cook them in, stirring occasionally until they soften, about 3 minutes. Add zucchini and cover. And covered, cook, covered. I can't even talk today. Again, I'm stumbling. Put the cover on, let it cook
June,
for a while.
Are you drunk? I'll just stop you for a minute. Are you drunk?
No, I'm not. I'm getting hot, though. Like I do when I have a glass of wine.
Are we allowed? Can we have wine on the show if we wanted to bring some in?
I mean, we've had wine people on, and we've sampled during, like, wine week and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Beer and, yeah.
I'm sorry. We don't want to stop you there.
No, that's all right. That was a good thought, though.
Yeah, because I was going to pull out my breathalyzer.
Oh. No, I'm not drunk, Mike.
Okay. Carry on.
And then you cook your zucchini and your onions. Add the garlic, the cumin, coriander, and cayenne until fragrant, about 30 seconds. Then you stir in the tomatoes. Bring them to a boil, reduce the heat, and then you add your edamames in, and bada bing, bada boom, you got a stew.
There you go.
Nice and easy.
How long would you let it cook so that the edamame softens?
Well, you did that in the water for 4 to 5 minutes, and then you drained them. And then you put it, after you put in the zucchini, you put the edamames in there, and you just let it meld together for about 5 minutes, and then it's ready.
That's all?
That's it.
So it's not a crock pot meal or anything like that?
No, no. Simple, easy, doesn't seem like it would take any time at all. Of course, Carol and I will, there's get 2 tablespoons of garlic, but
yeah,
a little more would,
a little more.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
make
a garlic
a little,
girl?
Yeah.
Right.
Whenever
yeah.
it calls for like 2 or 3 cloves, I put probably
yeah.
8 or 9.
She does.
Is that right?
She does go overboard sometimes.
It's a good deal. We have a fair amount of distance between us at this table here. No, she's never reeked of garlic, though, since I've known you.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, you haven't. Mm-hmm. I'd tell you.
So this is Egyptian edamame stew.
Stew,
so,
exactly.
Some of these ingredients are more of a Middle Eastern, if they're going to call it Egyptian. I'm wondering why. Did King Tut find
Egyptian?
It a favorite?
I don't know.
Did they bury the recipe with him with all those cats and his teeth and his gold?
It could be. You never know.
I have to ask these things.
I know. Leave it to you, Mike.
Okay.
Leave it to you. But that's it, and I didn't get any other information on it. Maybe next time I'll dig a little deeper. But even the nutritional value is excellent. It's only 257 calories, 10 grams of fiber.
Wow.
Total fat is 8. 29 carbs is a little high. Protein is 15 grams, so that's excellent. So, and your serving is about a bowl.
Well, here's why.
A cup, rather.
June, here's why 29 carbs is not high. Because diabetics will subtract the 8 grams of fiber, which effectively
right.
makes it 21 grams.
There you go.
For carbs. So that's really high in fiber, which makes it very efficient, you know, for the glucose absorption and all
exactly.
that stuff. So
you're absolutely right, Mike.
Yummy.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
It does. Everything
and it sounds
you bring
easy.
It does.
Well,
it
not
does
everything, but it does sound easy. Easy is always good, too, especially now with the nice weather coming and everything. Oh. But, hey, do you guys know what is in a honeymoon salad?
I believe I've heard this one before, but
you have?
Yeah.
Lettuce alone with no dressing?
No dressing, yeah.
That's my kind of joke. I like that. I get it.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, June.
I know.
What are we
going to
do?
What can I say? And do you know why the French like to eat snails?
I don't know.
Because they don't like fast food.
Oh.
Bada bing, bada boom. That was a...
Well, they're loving that on the West Side right now. Let me tell you that.
Yep, they are. They are.
Wow. You know what Barb made over the weekend? And perhaps you've made this before, June or Carol. Ratatouille.
No.
Which, I should have brought that up with Les Mis because it's, it's a French or kind of a Creole type of thing. And it was...
what exactly is it? I think...
With zucchini and...
Zucchini, eggplants, a variety of onions. Yeah.
It's like a stew.
Yeah, it basically is a stew.
Yeah.
And you season it up pretty good, I think. I think she used some oregano and I can't remember what the other, spices were. But it cooks down. We had it in the crock pot for a good part of the day, so that it does kind of become a stew and less of a soup.
Right.
But everything in there is really good for you.
And it's very filling, too.
Oh, yeah.
Did she add any beans to it?
I believe she did.
Yeah.
I believe she did, yes. And she also added some sliced black olives.
Oh, there you go.
Now, I am not an olive guy, so, I pick them out. It's like...
Me too. I don't really care for them.
I feel
either.
Like such a loser, because how many people absolutely love olives?
I know.
I mean, I like them. I don't love them.
But some people just can't get enough of them.
Oh, I know. They eat them all the time.
Yeah.
It's true.
All the stuffed olives with garlic and jalapenos.
I used to hate cilantro, too.
Cheese.
Up until a couple of years ago, I hated cilantro. Now, I'm having an affair with it.
There you go.
I love cilantro,
I hear that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very good.
And that's, another thing. Some people either really like it or you don't like it at all.
My mom hates it.
Cilantro?
Yeah.
Does not like it at all.
Yeah, I don't think that growing up when we did, that cilantro was not part of the spice rack. And then the Food Network came on and more international restaurants came on the scene, and people started trying those things that we never had as kids.
One thing about cilantro is I've been doing a garden for the past few years, and I love doing my herbs, but my cilantro, I have such a hard time with it because I just don't think we have a really good cilantro that's hardy. Because they have such fine stems and everything that once you cut it, it just, I don't know. So if any of the listeners out there know where we can get a good, hardy cilantro plant, please let us know, because I would love it. I love cilantro.
Well, that's what Google is for. Just Google, hardy cilantro, Northern Hemisphere, something like that.
True.
And you might have to send away for it. But there also might be some greenhouses or nurseries that have it.
I know.
Because, if you're having trouble, other people are having trouble growing it, too.
Right. Right. And I just went and got two tomato plants last week. The ones in the
hanging
pot.
Ones?
Hanging
oh,
ones.
Yeah?
And it has a ton of flowers on both of them.
Oh, cool.
I got one that's the small, you like them.
Cherry tomatoes.
Cherry tomato, grape tomato. And then the ones that are bigger, about,
quarter size.
Yeah. And they have so many buds on it. I'm so excited.
But now you don't leave it outside on the cold nights, right?
Put
it out during the day?
We don't have to, because we have a three-season porch that's all windows.
Oh.
So we just hang them in there. And once it gets really nice, then we'll just stick them outside. But no, until then, we keep them on the porch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nothing better than homegrown tomatoes. Mm. Seriously.
And I bet you within just like 3 weeks, we'll probably have some to start munching on.
Wow.
So
did you get them over on 101?
I did. No, I went to, it's
Deborah?
Called Fritz Farm.
Oh, I know
Fritz
where you mean.
Farm. It's, what is that? Back River Road. In Bedford.
Take the right after Manchester Country Club.
Yeah, right before the Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
And it's just about... almost at the end of Back River Road on the left. And they have amazing plants, vegetables, plants, and you name it, they have it. It's amazing.
All right.
They're really good.
There you go. And you'll give me that recipe and I'll get it on to foodforthoughtnh.com.
Yep.
And June, thank you. It's always fun having you on with Meatless Tuesdays. I think
Mondays,
we'll be switching
Tuesdays.
Back to Monday next week.
There you go.
Actually, Rocco won't be back next week, but he's going to call
vacation,
in.
Right?
He's going to call in next week.
Where is Rocco? In some weightlifting competition somewhere?
He is in Florida.
Is he?
He's in Florida.
Did he get permission from you to do this?
No, he didn't. He told me when he was there, so I don't know. But no, it's okay. He's going to call in next Monday,
good.
So it's all cool.
There you go.
It's all cool. So, okay, you're listening to Food for Thought, and when we come back, we're going to be in studio with Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Oh my gosh, sorry. Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. You're listening to 107.7 FM, WTPLFM.com. And It's been like a fast-paced show here today.
It really has. And tomorrow will be probably very busy as well.
Yes.
Let's let you know, though, that to make it all possible, it's Belmont Hall and Restaurant on Grove Street in Manchester, belmonthall.net. Top quality food made fresh for over 50 years. And Red Arrow Diner's favorite restaurant of the Palace Theater actors we found out here just a few moments ago. Manchester, Milford, and now the brand new drive-thru in Londonderry, one of the most convenient restaurants to get in and out of. You don't even have to leave your car because there is drive-thru. RedArrowDiner.com. Chili was served over the weekend at the Best of New Hampshire.
We served chili and mac and cheese.
And mac and cheese.
And Dinah Fingers.
Dinah Fingers.
And Blondie Brownies.
You see, you can't go anywhere without getting those Dinah Fingers. I would guess they are so popular.
They are very popular. And yes, we sold lots of Dinah Fingers this weekend at the Made in New Hampshire.
I mean, I know they were always popular, but I think after Twinkie had their little they had their little tizzy fit a couple years ago, I think people tried yours and liked them better.
It was actually Guy Fieri when he came to the diner on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. That was one of the items that we showcased. I mean, looking back on it now, I'm happy. But when it did happen, I was like, oh, my gosh. We were shipping Twinkies all over the place, like all over the world, literally. People were calling.
How
they still
long did
do.
It take before?
And that's how we know when they repeat the
right.
show. We'll get calls, and they want to order Twinkies. And we're like, did they air Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives again? And they're like, yep, we just saw you on Diners. And it's like, oh, my gosh.
How many times does that show air?
You know, isn't it amazing? Because we were one of the first season in 2007, and they still air it. To this day, they still air it.
Huh, and,
it's crazy.
And it seems to
it's
me
great.
That USA Today also selected you as one of the top diners or top 10 or something.
Top 10 diners in the country.
And I thought we saw another, some kind of a CNN thing, right?
It was MSN.
Oh, MSN.
MSN,
okay.
One of the top diners. They listed what was the top diner in each state,
I think,
we won that.
Yeah, I think it was having to do with being most reasonably priced. I think that was part.
Maybe that's what it
that was.
Was
part of the mix.
There's a few of them around.
But still,
like
that. Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's
very,
more than one
good.
Diner in the state.
Yes,
and they picked Red Arrow, so
yes.
that's very cool.
I humbly accept.
Yes,
yes.
Right, very good.
Never take it for granted ever. All right, and let's welcome on our next guest. Enough talking about the Red Arrow. Seriously. So let's talk about Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. So we're going to like to welcome Holly Blanchard and Donna Parker. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us both again.
Yeah. So anything new happening at Make-A-Wish? Anything?
We have some amazing things happening.
Ooh.
I'm going to let Holly start, though.
Exciting.
Sure. And I'm not sure how familiar some of the listeners are. I know we're on weekly, but...
Each week, we tell them a little bit each week, and
right.
then, you know, and they...
So those who don't know, Make-A-Wish grants the wishes of children who have life-threatening medical conditions. And coming up next week, Wednesday, April 29th, is actually World Wish Day. And World Wish Day is somewhat of a global celebration of wish granting. And I'm not sure if either of you are familiar with how Make-A-Wish actually started, but back in 1980, there was a 7-year-old boy named Chris Grecius who had leukemia. And Chris wished to be a police officer. And so the police officers in Phoenix, Arizona helped bring Chris's wish to life. And on April 29th in 1980, Chris got to be a police officer for the day, and he was outfitted with a uniform and a helmet, and this was really his true heartfelt wish. And so stemming from that, World Wish Day was founded, and every year on April 29th, we like to celebrate wishes that are happening all around the world. There are about 50 countries who take part in granting wishes, and there are over 60 chapters in the U.S. alone that grant wishes to children who have the life-threatening illnesses. And you actually have a picture right there, Chris.
I do. I read that story, and I was just fascinated by it.
Yes. So we're very excited. And for anyone who wants to get involved in the celebration, you can check out our Make-A-Wish New Hampshire Facebook page or other Make-A-Wish Facebook pages from other chapters as well, and check out social media sites and just help share the mission of Make-A-Wish. You never know. You might know a child who could be eligible for a wish, and simply referring a child can make a big difference.
So, Donna, Holly just explained how that first wish came about. Was there somebody? Is that where the actual Make-A-Wish organization began? Was it Arizona? Did you say?
Yes, it was. Unfortunately, Chris passed away,
okay.
But it was at his funeral where the police officers, the state troopers, Chris's mom and a few other people realized what they had done to actually bring a wish to life, and the change, you know, what they had impacted, how they had impacted him through his illness. And that, quite honestly, was the day that Make-A-Wish was born. Mm-hmm. And so they started, and then insurance agencies got together, and we were founded in 1986, and we granted our first wish here in New Hampshire in 1987. And we have granted over 1,247 wishes, I believe, is about what we are. And we're granting them daily, so the numbers
change.
Yeah,
and actually, I did some research myself, and I learned that throughout the world, approximately every 22 minutes, a wish is granted. And in the U.S. alone, about 38 minutes a wish is granted. And I think that's really impressive, just knowing many wishes are being granted.
Roughly 1,200, did you say, Donna?
Yep, 1,200.
So that's almost 30 years. So that's what, 40 a year? So that's one almost every week. I mean, if you stretch it out.
You know, and that was to start. We're now granting about 85 to 90 wishes a year. So that would be every 2 to 2.5 days. We know there are 112 children out there in the state of New Hampshire that are eligible for a wish. And part of which we're so grateful that you're allowing us to come talk is that there are people who don't know that we're here in New Hampshire. But there are also people who believe that Make-A-Wish is for children with terminal issues as opposed to life-threatening. So we really want to get the word out there that we grant wishes to children with life-threatening medical conditions.
Yeah, and we've, I think, discussed in the past that, unfortunately, you mentioned the one little boy that did pass away, as I know some of them do, and that must be heartbreaking. But the ones that do fortunately find their health again seem somehow bonded to the organization to somehow want to be involved to whatever degree they're able to.
Oh, most definitely. We have one of our wish recipients who's now on our board of directors. We have wish recipients who have gone on to be Miss New Hampshire. We have children going off to college seeking, a career in theater. So it's amazing how these kids all want to give back, be part of our organization. We also run an ambassador training program for some of our wish children to give them some public speaking skills for those who want to give back, and they can be part of Make-A-Wish and help us to tell our story so that we can reach more and more families and people.
And just this past weekend, I was at an event that a high school senior put on and hosted all by herself for her senior project. And that was really impressive to me. As the director of youth programs, I'm working with children who want to give back to the organization and potentially help out one of their peers. And so this high school senior who hosted the event invited some wish families. And we had a young wish recipient who attended and actually sang a song at the event and then spoke about her disease and illness and how much the Make-A-Wish impacted her treatment and her process of recovering. And it's really neat to have the ambassadors involved and sharing their stories about how much Make-A-Wish has affected their lives.
It is. And over the weeks, you know, you've been coming on and we've had a couple of the Wish Kids here actually, you know, talking on the air. And I am just so, you know, just amazed at how compassionate they are. I mean, they're so compassionate and just so wanting to give back. And then when they talk about their wish, and, you know, we talked about, you know, how did you know, you know, what wish you wanted to do? And it wasn't so much about them. It was about, you know, their family and getting together and just being together as a family. And it was just really, really touching. And then, like you said, a lot of them, you know, they're ambassadors and, you know, just giving back in the community, which is what it's all about, really.
It is. It really is amazing. I mean, and it truly offers a family to be together, even if only for a week, to rekindle those, you know, memories. A lot of times dads are at home with the siblings, mom's at the hospital with the child. And so to be able to go somewhere where the trip is completely planned and the kids can be together and just enjoy a whole week has really, you know, given that extra energy to fight that battle, as well as those memories that they can talk about. You see their eyes light up every time you talk to them and ask them about their wish. They tell about the highlights and you just see that smile. It just comes back. So it's awesome.
And even when you talk to them about their highlights of their wish, it's not always about, it's not about them.
No.
It's about the family and, you know, the brother, the sister, you know, I'm just fascinated by hearing, you know, when I hear them,
these kids are our inspiration. I mean, you can't have a bad day when you talk to these kids because they are so positive, so excited, so wanting and willing to help at anything. that it's just amazing. It makes our job one of the best jobs out there.
Imagine working upstairs, Mike. It must be just so...
You can come up and visit us
so
any day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun. I just picture them all with little wands.
Well, there's probably a little more to it than that.
There is.
Like Ms. Donna, you did mention there's, I think you said 112 wish-eligible children in the state, and you know, there's only so many wishes you can grant. So are these kids that have been vetted through an application process? Because people listening today for the first time don't know about Make-A-Wish. Walk them through what they need
okay.
to do.
Okay. So basically, if your child has an illness, the parent, the doctor, or the child themselves can refer themselves. So they call the office. It's a very simple form that we go through. We just find out what their illness is, name and address, you know, the contact information. That is submitted to the doctor, and the doctor actually deems that child eligible. So if they fall under the criteria of life-threatening, they are eligible for a wish. From there, once the doctor says they are eligible, we receive that paperwork back. We send out two volunteer wish granters, and the magic begins.
And then that's where the wands come in, Carol.
That's where the wands come in.
Exactly.
And we will grant as many wishes as children are referred to us. If 112 children were to come to us, we would do our best to grant all of those wishes.
All right, so we know that it takes money to do this. You can't get around that. And I know that there's a breakfast coming up, so we've got about 30 seconds to give us the details on that.
So Thursday, May 7th at 7 a.m. at the Radisson, you will not be disappointed.
I can't wait.
There is going to be, I can only tell you one thing, there's going to be a wish that comes to life. So if you want to hear about, and it's 1 hour, it won't take a whole lot of time out of your day, come to the Radisson, give us a call, and reserve a seat.
Donna Parker, Holly Blanchard, Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Same here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. All right. You are listening to Food for Thought. And up next is Kale and Company. And he is here at 30 Rock on Elm, or otherwise known as The Beak. That's what they call it. That's what they call it. So up next, Kale and Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.